Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D, and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Tom.
We're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So Simon, are you ready?
I surely am.
Tom, are you ready?
I am.
I'm ready to go talk to some ghosts in a very nice, polite manner to tell them to leave this town. If you guys are ready, let's dive in to this week's episode. This week, we played Haunted Lands. We played as a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week, it's the Spectre Hunting, City Protecting Kingdom Builder Haunted Lands. In this episode, we're going to dive into the things we liked and break down everything that makes it great, because we only play awesome games. And in Haunted Lands, who are you going to call?
Well, not you. You were rubbish at clearing ghosts.
I came last. Don't call me. Literally, don't call me.
He's a B-list Ghostbuster.
He's a B-list Ghostbuster. Yeah, exactly. Haunted Lands is a competitive Euro game for 2 to 4 players with absolutely stunning illustrations and amazing meeples. You explore new lands in search of new resources to help develop your community. But beware, specters from ancient civilizations still dwell in these places, frightening the explorers and making your buildings unusable. As perceivers, you are the only ones who can communicate with these restless spirits to help try to drive them away from the lands and become the heroes of Kalina.
Piss off, ghost.
Basically, yeah.
Get out of here.
Get out of here, you ghosts. Haunted Lands will play 2 to 4 players. It's designed by Leonardo Romano with art by David Girardi, I think.
That's what it says on the box, it's not what it says on BGG.
Well, we'll see. Published by Ludus Magnus Studios and plays in about 60 minutes. Accurate?
Yeah, if you don't have to rewind turns, but...
Enough of that.
Yeah. it's standard Eurofare, right? First time you're learning it, it's 50 to 100% longer.
Yeah.
So right. I'm sure we can go faster now that we know what we're doing.
Familiarity, you'd absolutely be like, okay, yeah, this, then that, then that.
You can't buy this yet, but if you could, it'd be 49 euros. I got it at Spiel because I'm a lucky boy.
And you can pre-order it?
You can pre-order it right now from Ludus Magnus Studios' website for 49 euros or your international equivalent. And you'll get a free little mini expansion as well, apparently.
Hey.
Yeah, which is good. But yeah, I have the Spiel edition and I'm super happy.
And this is just the retail one, right? You don't get you didn't have the expansion.
No funky stuff in this one, though, yet. So let's start, as we always do, and let's dive into the components and art design. And I'll throw it over to you, gentlemen.
Ugly.
It's such a disgusting looking game.
Why did you even pick this up? No. It is, of course, quite a delight to look at.
It's gorgeous.
I'm going to start with the box art. I was just saying before we hit record, really unique, curious box art. A very white background, which in itself is unusual. Mostly things are fully saturated in colour. Yeah. And then this gloved hand holding a whole city in its palm, which I think is just super attractive.
I love the logo, the Haunted Lands logo, because it's got two spooky ghosts integrated into the logo.
Yeah. The font is fantastic. And you're right, it's a very eye-catching box art. I mean, I said it's kind of like a criticism, but it's also kind of interesting where you don't quite know what the game's about, but it does intrigue you to want to pick up the box.
Yes.
Yeah, it does a perfect job of drawing you in. It really does.
What is that?
I really like the little sort of like Ghibli-esque, friendly, like smiling ghost specters.
I picked up one of the pieces. Yeah. They are grinning quite delightfully on the screen printed meeples.
Yes, they're like what's it in Spirited Away? No face. They remind me of No Face.
Quite reminiscent of that. Yeah, rattling their chains.
It is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the art design, I think, is just wonderful. The colour palette is, I think, brilliant. It's not super bright colours. It's kind of pastel-y, right?
It's got that kind of non-standard.
Almost panda pastel.
Away from your red, yellow, green, blue.
Yeah.
More pastel greens and pinky purples and
so on. Yeah, the cubes and the resources and the tiles and everything are a little bit muted. Just enough that it's not garish because there's a lot of stuff on the board.
Yeah. And then you've got various hex tiles? Hexes within hexes.
They're called territory tiles.
Territory tiles.
But they're hexes. They're seven hexes. in a bigger hex.
That's right. 7 hexes within a bigger... That's like a meta hex. Like, is it hexes that contain other hexes?
A radius 2 hex.
Yeah, anyway. But they are fantastic, and they have different terrains being displayed on them. And again, the artwork of those is fantastic. What we all noticed with the terrain tiles for the hex tiles, they've got lots of little, I suppose, like Easter eggs.
Yeah, they're sort of all reminiscent of fairy tales and little cultural references. Yeah. There's like a little Red Riding Hood.
There's a monster somewhere.
Yeah, on one of the other tiles.
Looks like
a
little Gandalf standing outside a mountain entrance.
Yeah, there's like a dragon under a lake in one of them as well. There's some really, really cool stuff just in the art design. Like you say, the meeples themselves, all double-sided screen printed, and there is meeples for the ghosties and for your player piece and for all of the buildings. Everything is a meeple, and I freaking love it.
And they're really, really nice quality ones. They're thick wood.
Yep.
Big meeples.
Yep.
Double screen printed, both sides.
And varnished.
And varnished.
Yeah.
Right?
They're
and
really lovely.
All of the buildings, 4 different types of buildings. All of the buildings also have an inset space on the top, which is a really nice design element that has space for you to sit a cube in it to designate who owns each building.
Yeah, it's really neatly done. It's a smart way of determining who owns what, who built which space. Because you're going to be regularly looking out over the board at the end of each round, seeing which buildings you own, so you gain the resources for that type of thing. And I think it's an elegant way of pulling that off without having to clip rings around the bottom.
Or they could have had a whole set of coloured buildings for everyone, which would have, you know, bumped up the price and the production.
I think it would, you're right. This way they've got the buildings are the buildings, they become yours with the cube, and it's so easy and so clever to just put a little cube on there. Works really well.
I love how all of the meeples, including the player pieces, are all different sculpts, right? So the buildings have their own individual sculpts for the different type of building. The spectre has its own shape. Your own player piece has its own perceivers.
And each of the 4 perceivers have different art and silhouettes, right?
Yeah, the different artwork as well. So the art design, I think, is absolutely spectacular. It is very like whimsical fantasy. I think we all sort of agreed on, right?
Yeah,
like, whimsical, almost Ghibli. Whimsical fantasy, and it's an absolute delight to look at. I think the illustration's wonderful,
quite cartoony without being Disneyfied. It's more of a classic like Grimm's Fantasy type.
Yes, that's right.
There's some nice sort of little gameplay variations under the surface as well. Like, you've got more tiles than you need for the size of the board, so there's variety. You can mix and match them, right? You've got a load of cards that we'll talk about, and there's all more additional cards than you actually need, so you can sort of randomly seed the game and get lots of variety every time you play.
Loads of stuff in there. Yeah, it's just absolutely delightful. So we talked roughly about the art design, which I think we all agree is pretty great. We talked a little bit about the production pieces. So we talked about the meeples and about the cubes that you get. Let's dive into those cards. Like you say, there is a bunch of different stuff that we're going to use for the game that will help with variety, randomization, help for replayability. But it's this, again, beautiful artwork that gives you another insight into the world of this game, I think.
Yeah, so there's a load of big cards. You've got all of the skill cards that represent various passive bonuses you can get unlocked over the course of the game.
They've got all their individual art as well.
You've got a market card. So you'll have a random market card. There's actually more than one to choose from that will set how the market functions for the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's spectre cards that set how the spectres behave for the game. And there's 3 of them, and you can stack them or choose any combination for different difficulties.
You've got your own sort of deck of, I suppose...
They are assignment cards.
Assignment cards, that's right. These will give you end-game bonuses.
End-game bonuses.
As a little catch-up mechanism, which we'll dig into a little bit later.
Yeah, that's really, really clever. So we'll talk about that. And then there's the reward card, which designates what you get for telling a ghost to piss off.
Yeah, which is just wonderful. And that will start to make sense as we dig into how the game plays.
Important to note on these, I think, it's all icons and numbers, no words. So you don't really... There's a like a round overflow thing.
Yeah, language agnostic.
I think that works really well. It might take you a moment to work out what means what, but once you've got it down, there's zero confusion, I think.
Yeah, once I started explaining it to Tom, once I started explaining it to Tom, he immediately went, oh, that means that, that means that. Oh, now I know this means this and this means this. The iconography is really well designed, I think.
Yeah, and there's not that many icons. It's just you need to know what the 4 or 5 or 6 icons are, and then it's just combinations.
Yeah, something to represent each of your possible actions, something to represent each of the four resources, and then the interactions between them, really.
It's
really neatly done.
So other production bits, the other significant production pieces are the player boards and I suppose the central scoring track and central board, all of which are sort of not really double thickness, but they are layered.
It's like a 1.5.
Yeah, I wrote down not quite double thick.
Yeah, sort of 1.5. But it's nice because they have recessed areas on your player boards to put your tokens.
It's thin card on top of thick card stock so that you have a little bit of an inset so stuff doesn't slide around.
And it works perfectly for what you need. You're not regularly moving stuff around your board. It is just to keep the card tokens in place. I think it's a nice little touch.
You're flipping tokens quite a lot. So maybe having one that's like double thick and inset, that it might be a bit fiddly trying to lift the tokens out.
Probably would
it's quite nice.
I think so.
Yeah, it works very well.
And then, of course, there's the giant dice, the oversized two dice, which are great. So probably the most colourful piece of the game.
A couple of custom dice.
One is the rewards dice, which got your swag bags on, red, purple and green. And then the other is the terrain dice, your forests, your grasslands and your mountains, both of which are rolling regularly and
annoying,
super satisfying.
Yeah. Very satisfying and like annoying but entertainingly rounded edges. So when you chuck them, they might occasionally spin and send you on an emotional journey, which is what happened in one of our games.
And those dice are like the only random element of the game, right?
Yeah.
Everything else is very Euro.
Yes.
And then you've got the dice that set the sort of the randomized elements of the game, which is nice.
We're dealing with ghosts. You can't expect them to work to a
ghosts
script.
Are not going
to
behave.
Fantastic. So there's quite a lot in the box, actually, for your €49. And talking about that, then, how do you rate the production of Haunted Lands?
I think it's brilliant. I mean, for the price, €49.
Yes.
Just the sheer amount of wooden meeples is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
By today's standards on board games, for €49, you probably get something that's mostly cardboard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is true, yeah.
Yeah,
I think I'm happy to lead that out and say this is a 5 out of 5 for the production for me. I love the artwork.
The art is fantastic. Yeah. I don't think there's any art reused on any of the skill cards, is there?
It's all
unique. Those are all custom. Every character's deck, every one of the Perceiver's assignment card decks.
They're all unique.
They're all unique. They have their own art for each of the Perceiver's. They've got their own player boards that have their art on them.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's custom. All of the tiles are different. The tiles are different combinations of art. And like we said before, they're not just a copy-paste of the same art in each hex for each type of terrain. They're all different. Mm-hmm. So if you look at one of the tiles and there's three fields in a row, they've actually drawn the art as three fields running into one another. It's actually one sort of big continuous line of fields.
They've drawn it as a map tile rather than a hex tile.
Yeah, it's almost like they decided to detail out what they wanted sort of art-wise on the tile and then worked out which terrains each of the hexes within that big tile would be.
Yeah, nicely done.
Which is nice.
Yeah. How do you guys rate the production?
I think I'm going to join you with a 5.
Definitely.
Yeah, I just noticed as well, I'm not sure we said, the score tokens are your own unique artwork pieces on a wooden tile as well.
That's right.
They're called Valor Tokens.
The Valor Token.
Valor Points is victory points in this.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's actually quite an unusual and a nice production element. Normally, if you've got a little scoring piece, it's a cardboard bit, right?
Or another cube in your
colour. But this is, they've given you a specific bit with your artwork on it, which is quite nice.
So fives all round.
Well
done,
beautiful. It's a beautiful production, especially for that money. So, Tom, actually no, Simon. Sorry, I made a mistake there. You were winning, Simon pipped you at the end.
Yeah,
Simon, you won Haunted Lands in this particular game.
So valorous.
Let's dive into the core mechanics.
You're more valorous than I am.
Yeah, much more valorous.
But only right at the last minute.
Right at the last minute. Until then, but
it comes from being last most of the game.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
We'll talk about that.
We will.
Very interesting. So we'll dive into the core mechanics then. How do you win a game of Haunted Lands, Simon?
You are obviously working along a victory point tracker, a valor point track. You gain points from a wide range of things, or at least a fairly varied range of things. First and most obvious one is build the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
There's three main types of building you can build: your sawmill, your windmill, and your water mill. There's also the mines, so there are four, each one representing then a gain of resource of said thing. Each building that you build is worth a number of points, 1, 2, or 3 points. So one of the first things I did was just start building buildings, get yourself on that points track.
Yeah, get you some points for each building you
get
build.
Get you some points straight away, and it gives you some income for resources as the game goes on.
Yeah.
The other main thing is increasing your skills. So as we said, there's four skill different skill cards available. Is that changeable per player count?
Yeah. No, not per player count.
No, but there's 12 cards, I think.
Yes.
So you have a third of them every time in a different combination.
So these skill cards give you ongoing in-game bonuses, but also in unlocking that skill, which again costs resources to do, gives you a number of skill points, a varying number depending on how early you are to unlock that. So if you're in early doors, you'll get more points. If you come to it late on, you'll still get the ongoing game bonus, but you might get fewer points. Yeah. Or indeed you might not get any points at all.
I think Euro style, you've also got points on your tracks, your little engine building player board, right? You complete a track, you get points, just like every
kind
Euro
like
game.
In the Wolves and stuff like that.
That's right, it, yeah. Quite like the Wolves in the... Which thing do I upgrade? Or even like the Fox Experiment, as we've played more recently. Right. I can do more of this thing.
Top out a track in a Euro game, you normally get points.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good idea. So yeah, that's the combination of the main three. And then in the last round, as you vanquish ghosts, you tell them to bugger off.
Yeah.
you may or may not, depending on a roll of that dice, gain a few more points
you
as
may
you go.
Occasionally
or
get some
you might just get fat stacks of cash.
Yeah. So I mean we can talk about how the ghosts work, right? They're the randomized element of the game. When you remove a ghost from the board, you roll the rewards dice and it'll give you a different type of reward. Ghosts get more difficult to vanquish over the course of the game.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
But they also get better rewards, depending on how you roll. I mean, Wayne rolled literally the wrong reward versus what he wanted every single time for the entire game.
Hilariously.
Nothing's ever a bad reward in and of itself.
It's still a reward.
It's just not necessarily the one you want.
Exactly.
So early rounds, you might be getting loads of resources, and getting resources in this game is great. And one of the rounds, you got three at once, which is
just
basically
awesome.
Two turns in one go for vanquishing a ghost. So yeah, really good opportunity there.
You might also get points the last possible way, which is via these assignment cards that you get and their end game scoring. And we'll come to those. But yeah, it's basically most points wins at the end of the game. Let's talk about how a round works. So you start the round by doing a haunt, and that's always the last player, which is important.
You jumped ahead a step.
What did I do?
The game structure is there's three seasons.
Three seasons.
And three rounds per season.
Ah, yes. Three seasons and three rounds per season. It's only nine turns, which is
it's only
short.
Yeah, it's only nine turns, but it's important because at the end of each season, there's a pretty significant reshuffle.
Yeah, maybe nine turns is a thing, because De Vere's The White Castle, quite famously already, has those nine things.
That's right.
Icky's 12, 13?
I think it's 12 plus a bonus one.
Because it's got four seasons in Icky,
right? That's right. It's 12 plus a bonus.
But it's the same sort of idea where you subdivide the game not just into rounds, but further into groups of rounds, in this instance, seasons.
Yeah. Works very well, but it's it keeps everything concise. But yeah, quite right, you've got that round structure, and that's important because you start each of those rounds with a haunt. The haunt is done by the person in last place. They'll roll the haunt dice, and they're going to put four ghosties out on the matching terrain type.
And that's the first of two different catch-up mechanics, right? Whoever's in last place gets to choose where the ghosts go, and they could place those ghosts in a way that favours them. In a location, for example, that they could then go and easily get to that ghost if they want to vanquish the ghost for a reward. Or they could place them to block someone else from doing something.
Which is absolutely viable because they will stop you building. They will also have another ability, depending on how difficult you've made the game, up to one to three different abilities.
By default, and what we played with, was it stopped you from doing the manual harvest, the manual exploit action as well.
Yeah, which is basically get a resource out of the ground, but they stop you doing that. That's what you will do. They will stop you doing that. So you'll do a haunt, and then you will yield any buildings that you've built. You get resources for
Yay.
income
phase. Super simple. And then everyone takes
their turns. I love when they just get resources.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
You've got to build buildings last turn, first. I get stuff this turn. It's always really satisfying.
Yeah, and you start by randomly punching trees and pulling rocks off the ground yourself. And
then,
Minecraft.
As things go on, yeah, eventually you have a giant industrial machine doing all your work for you.
Which is, Tom basically mechanising the entirety of Kalena.
Pave over the whole kingdom, then there's no ghosts.
But me, for example, I was going around doing hard work the entire game, pulling stuff out of the ground. I was like, why don't I just make myself put out more things out of the ground?
You went with the training montage approach to the game, right?
Didn't work for me. Yeah. Definitely build buildings in this game, for sure.
You got three buildings out versus Tom's eight?
Nine.
It's many.
Nine. You had eight, I think.
Three times. Yeah, you guys smashed me for building. I tried a thing, didn't work. And then you take your turns. And I like the way the turns work in this game. I really do. You've got, I suppose, tokens that represent all the actions you can take.
Mm.
Yeah,
and you sort of flip them.
Four specific types of token, which you have varying numbers of, and you can activate in varying combinations as
in any order.
As and when. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, in any order is really important.
Mm.
So the basic one is moving. You start with four, I think, movement tokens, but each type of terrain you move into costs a different amount.
Yeah,
so it's not just a case.
Think of it as sort of like a number of action points for a given type of action, right?
That's it.
You had 4 points of movement for. Four little tiles that you can flip over, and you can flip them over one at a time, so it's easy to keep track.
Yeah. So into or out of the city is only a point of movement, as it is with a field. But if you want to start climbing the mountains, that's three of your four starting action points. So a real tricky decision point. Like, you might get there, and then you might be stuck there, or you might get partway and not actually be able to proceed to the hex you want. So there's a little bit of planning, which we all quite enjoy.
As we experience towards the end of the game, you realise that, you know, if you want to come and go from the city, actually a lot of the spaces around the city are not easy terrain to come and go from.
Indeed, yeah. We had like one easy out from the city and everything else was,
it was pretty much a bit of a mission.
Which I think it's actually not a bad bit of the game. Right. And the hexes are, to a degree, randomised. So we could have had different setups which have allowed easier exit or ingress to the city. But no, I think that's really cool. The second option, the second line on your player board, is to shout at a ghost, as we've dubbed it.
Yeah, shout at a ghost.
I don't know what the official
What's the actual action called?
I think bottom. Vanquish sounds quite good, but set them to rest. I don't know. Tom's
I think it's literally...
Persuade.
Persuade.
I just saw the word persuade.
It's persuade.
So to start with, first round,
by telling them to piss off.
You flip your one persuasion token over in whilst you're
persuade.
In there.
Persuade. Yeah, it's persuade. Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
So yeah, you move into the hex where a ghost already is. You flip your persuade token. It disappears. And you roll your reward dice and get one of those three variable rewards that are available during this season.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and simple. Gets more
difficult.
Hard to do. As the game progresses, because you need two persuasion tokens or three persuasion tokens.
It's
in the last
interesting,
round.
Right? Because it's the randomised element of the game. You're not guaranteed the reward you necessarily want. You'll always get a reward, but you sort of have to do this. You can't avoid it because the ghosts stop you from building and they stop you from harvesting.
So yeah, you can't ignore the ghosts.
No. And more importantly, there's like a little co-op element, like crisis management element to the game. Because if you don't manage the ghosts, and nobody manages the ghosts, they eventually overflow into the city and everyone loses.
Everyone loses, which is great.
I love that
as an idea. Like, just if you can't ignore them, because they will just literally make you lose.
Yes.
Very clever.
Yeah. Moving on, what else have we got that we can do on a turn, Timon?
Third row is your harvest action. Nice and straightforward. You're on a tile. You can pull the resource from that. So you're in a field, you get wheat. On a mountain,
you get rock.
It locks it with an exploit token, right? So you need to do it once per season.
Just,
no one else can then use it.
Can't just spam the field over and over again. You have to move on and farm something else. The lakes you can't move into, but if you're in an adjacent hex, you can farm water from them.
Just water. No, I'm just getting ahead of myself.
Quite crucially in the game that we played, one of the skill upgrades, which you can choose to do or not, Wayne got it early on and it felt super powerful, is that every time you harvest, you can then claim another resource of your choice.
Anytime. Yeah, which is super
good. Which, when you bear in mind, some of the buildings require stone and getting to the mountains cost you 3 points of movement.
Yeah.
If you can harvest in a field and then pick up free stone... Oh boy, that's a good combo.
And all of the buildings, except for the water mills, require two resources. So if you can get both those resources with one action, that's a lot of efficiency.
It's real good. Yeah. It's real good.
And building is the fourth main player board action. So you start with one, you can get the opportunity to buy a second one. And so when you're in a hex, you pay the two matching resources as displayed on a little reminder card that we had in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a wheat field, you want to build the windmill there, you need to pay one wood and one water, which you can have picked up on your travels at some point. It gains you a point. You put a windmill out there. You're no longer able to harvest in that space, but you can then get that as an ongoing constant yield resource beginning of every round.
Yep.
And yeah, getting that combination right of the resources you need to build the building and then the resources those buildings will give you is really clever. And it's kind of the core of this game engine beyond vanquishing those ghosts. So it's kind of like a double header of a core game.
Yeah,
absolutely. Once everyone's done their combination of actions, you've got bonus things that you can do during your turn as well, which don't cost your action tokens, such as...
If you're in the city,
basically. You're in the city, yeah. You can either sell those resources that you've just gained from the very central hex.
Mm-hmm. That's the market.
The market, yeah, which will get you a bunch of money. And you can spend that money in the outer areas of the city.
The boroughs.
To train and upgrade your player board, which will get you more of those action tokens.
Yeah, better action economy.
Better action economy and... Or upgrade to those special skill cards that you talked about.
And the skills are all basically passives, right?
Yeah, passive. For the rest of the game, which are all fantastic.
And it's interesting because, you know, because we randomly seed out the skills, you might get skills that work in different combinations every time you play the game.
Absolutely.
Like we've been talking about it. We've sort of put out the skills and we thought, actually, you know, there's a couple of these skills that work together really well and the other ones don't really figure into it so much.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've got three of our four were really, really useful together. And the fourth one, not so much use, and only Wayne bought it.
Yeah, got me points, but that was basically it. And it would have been better in a slightly different scenario, maybe. That's basically it. And you would go through that flow three times and the game ends. You do a haunt, you get your income, you'll do your actions, and then you'll rest and reset. Super fascinating, super interesting game, and actually quite interactive for a Euro game.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as much as it might sound like you're playing... You know,
solitaire
farming simulator. You're really not. As Tom said, you've got that group management of ghosts.
Yeah.
Noticing that your forests are all full of spirits already.
Yeah.
So whoever rolls the next one and it's forest again, all the city's getting overrun. That means no upgrades, no, you know, very close to losing the game. So you've got that interaction there and also then vying for resources. Yeah. You might come along into a neighbouring area and just harvest
it. The map looks totally big when you start, but it gets small very quickly.
Between very quick.
The exploit tokens from manual harvesting, stopping you from using those spaces for a whole round, for a whole season, which is three rounds, and all of the buildings that stop you from harvesting in those spaces... The board gets really, really small for the things that a player piece can do over the course of the game.
Yeah, looking at our end game state in front of us now, there's maybe six empty tiles out of about 40.
Yeah, everything's either a ghost or a building, or a ghost and a building, or a ghost and a building and a player, or
it's been, or the lakes have all been harvested, and there's that's it.
Never a ghost and a building, apparently. You can't put ghosts on buildings.
Yeah, the ghosts don't move. You're right. Yeah,
they sort of sit where they are.
I really thought this might be a part of the game, you know. I thought that when I saw all these ghosts and
stuff,
I thought they were going to like move along a hex or chase a player out. Or
I tell you what, I like that you don't have to move them and manage that.
Yeah.
Because some games like this will have like a phase where you have to follow a program for how the ghosts behave.
Yeah.
In this, it's actually really simple. And like I said before, it works like a double-edged sword where the player who's in last gets to roll to randomize the terrain type, but then they get to pick where the ghosts go. So they can place it to their benefit or to hinder another player. Right?
Yeah,
so,
you can choose a lockdown strategy unless you know the player can get rid of the ghost. Or you can choose a beneficial strategy. I can get rid of the ghost.
It makes
I'll
it feel like part of the player's repertoire of actions rather than the game playing against you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you start playing at higher difficulties and having multiple abilities, those ghosts become a humongous pain in your ass.
I can imagine.
I mean, like I said, at the moment, our ghosts just stopped you harvesting fine. But if the ghost also stopped you harvesting and cost you an extra movement to move into that space, that becomes incredibly annoying.
Yikes.
And then
the third one's worse.
Yeah, and then if the ghosts stopped all of your buildings, you know, getting you resources, yeah, that is even more of a pain.
Specifically, all of the buildings in every adjacent space.
To a ghost, then stop producing.
And you can play with all of these at
once. You can play with all of them. Yeah.
No thanks.
If you look at the board right now with where the ghosts are, how many of the buildings are still turned on?
It would switch them almost all of them off. Like,
not many. Not many. Almost every building would be off.
It would switch quite a lot of them.
Out of, like 20-odd buildings
one
we built?
One or two, maybe.
I think that mine...
Yeah.
that mine there next to you.
In the middle of nowhere.
That's about it.
That's the only one that's going to produce.
Almost every single building would be turned off,
which is great.
Nobody's getting any passive income.
So it'd be hard pivoting into buying... Oh, God. The cascade here.
Yeah. So this is where...
You'll need to unlock more persuasion tokens.
You have to focus more on ghost shouting.
Yeah.
More ghost shouting.
You need resources to sell to get the coins to buy the tokens, which you can't get because there's ghosts there.
It's like when we played Northgard and the wolves stopped everyone from harvesting and no one had anything to do for most of the game.
Well, those Northgard animals, that's a whole other thing.
Northgard animals are a bastard.
But it's... super cool. There is plenty of interaction with the ghosts, because you're going to be placing them in places that annoy your opponents, probably, but also through deliberate harvesting and exploit of resources nearby.
Like a wall of inaccessible areas that won't be able to give anyone any resources. And
if
they
you
have to
can
go
run
else.
Over before someone's turn and harvest the thing that's in front of them, then that takes away an option. Yeah. Isn't that right, Tom?
Imagine
Tom. Imagine who would do that, Tom?
Yes.
I'm quite glad that...
I just wanted to build loads of windmills, and I decided what I wanted to do was build the windmills next to Wayne.
Yeah, and then, also, again, building is another way of interaction through denial.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it is. What it's, it is. It's area denial because the spaces are exclusive. One building.
Exactly. One building only. One harvest only.
I said this as we played. I'm quite glad that our group meta is still that Tom messes with Wayne. It means I get the win on this occasion.
It's a two-way street.
I largely played on my side of the board. Oh, yeah, I know Wayne is going out. Just through Wayne's chaotic nature by default, even if he's not targeted, is going
to... It's probably messing with me because I'm trying to meticulously plan, but it's very difficult to do around Wayne.
Yeah, fair. Entirely fair. Yeah, so this... Again, it's... The game is far more than the sum of its parts. So when you explain it, you're like, oh, it's... get resources, deal with the occasional ghostie. But I think partly due to its beautiful artwork and design and production, and also its ease of play, actually. It's quite easy and breezy. It just sucks you in really well, I think.
Like, there's a lot... Yeah. We say it's easy to play. It's theoretically easy to play.
Theoretically.
You could spend a bunch of time puzzling over the most efficient way to spend your actions, particularly later on when, you know, like I've got, for example, 13 actions?
Yeah.
13 action tokens. If I could manage to work out my actions in a way that I use all of my actions every turn, that's great. But I could do something slightly wrong, and then I don't get to use something, and it's inefficient, and you might want to rethink what you're doing, or we might get halfway through a turn and then realise that actually we were doing it wrong, and I have to rewind a whole turn.
That happened once, Tom.
Yeah.
But the puzzle about efficiency of using all of your action tokens is one of the key puzzles of the game, right?
Yeah.
It always bugs me when I'm like, I could have done this differently, and
like,
I got this left over.
I didn't get to use this.
It is very satisfying when you do manage to get everything in order.
Done. Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the tougher decisions I found were between spending the resources you've got on building a building, selling them for bonus, not just the flat coin, but an increasing amount of coin if you manage to get a good combo. But then having that trigger one of the skills which allowed you to refresh an action.
Yeah.
Or using the same resources to unlock said skill because you don't have it yet. And you want to use the same resources three times.
Yeah. Resources for buildings, resources for skills, or resources for market to get money to buy more actions.
Let's talk about those skills a bit, because what we've really focused on is the sort of the core gameplay loop, right? Which is get resources, kill ghosties, banish, vanquish, talk to, tell to piss off. Yeah, exactly. So, but these skills are ways that you'll break that loop and break the game a bit.
Yes.
For example, in our game, we had, if you manage to Vanquish a ghost, you get to flip over a Vanquish token. So you could potentially get an extra one. You get a reset.
A little bit of efficiency.
Yeah, there was one which helped your movement a bit by making sure that the central hex of the game, i.e. the market, was basically the same as the training.
Yeah, the market and the boroughs was the same thing. So you never had to go all the way to the center of the city. You can just run to the edge of the city and do everything there.
Which, more helpful than it sounds.
Really
useful.
Super
helpful.
Yeah, you'd never have to spend that extra movement. Movement is a premium in this game, I think. Yeah. And then we also had the ability to, again, refresh any one of your tokens if you did like a big sale at the market.
If you sell three things in any combination at once, you get to refresh a token.
Which was great. And again, you can do it multiple times, which I love.
Yeah.
And then the other one, as we've already mentioned, was if you harvest, you got an extra...
A wild resource, of your choice.
It's the only way I won the game. Being able to pick up stone without going to the mountains.
So good.
Oh my gosh.
So good. And getting these in different combinations is fantastic. And it will really help, I suppose, steer you towards a certain game style if you wanted to.
Actually, I think that's a really good point. If we didn't have that exploit bonus, the one where you can pick any wild resource, and we maybe didn't roll well on our ghosts that gave us resources,
very different game.
Be super stone solved,
very different game,
and everyone would have to go up a mountain.
I built three sawmills which all require stone.
Yeah.
At no point did I harvest it on a mountain.
I mean, I built some mines on mountains, but it's a mission.
Imagine how different this game is.
A lot of resource expenditure to get up to a mountain and build a mine.
This game suddenly becomes very different without that. Mm. Right, very, very different. Just by swapping those skills out. And like I said, this is what breaks that core gameplay loop and makes it very interesting. Mm. I think really, really cool. Kind of similar, I've mentioned it before, like about to Smart Fenink. You've got those passives. Once you get it, it's there forever. So if you unlock this early, it's like there for the rest of the game, which is really, really fantastic.
But there's more to choose from, right?
Yeah,
Smart Phone Inc. has little double-sided tokens, so it's one or other for each of the options. You can obviously mix and match them in lots of different ways. But
yeah, there's 12 different skill cards, and you have four here. And
I like that everyone has access to the same, though, because sometimes only one or two people in a game might pick up or have access to a thing which then feels loop-breaking.
Yeah.
In this, everyone has the opportunity for it. They just get fewer points.
Yeah,
I think
More points.
First come.
I think if Tom had the option to get two resources every time he harvests and no one else ever could, I think that would feel like a runaway victory. In the same way for any of them, really.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about mechanically for this game?
Catch-ups.
The catch-ups. Yeah, like you said, there are two main types of catch-up. One being that the person in last place will always choose where the ghosts go.
Which could be really useful.
Could be really good. Also, this is really interesting, where after the first and second seasons conclude, the players not in first place, i.e. everyone else except the leader, will get to pick an assignment card or two assignment cards in the last season. And they're all endgame scoring bonuses.
Hugely game-changing.
And at the end of each season, you check the player order, because that determines the turn order for
end of each round
season. Each round.
End of round.
Each round changes turn order depending on who's in the lead. End of season gives you assignment options, and only the people who are in second or third or fourth place get those choices. So if you have someone who gets a runaway lead early on, particularly if they get a runaway lead before season two starts, and they somehow manage to stay in the lead past the beginning of season three, they get no cards.
Which is really interesting.
And players two, players three might have three cards.
Well, they would do. They would have three cards each, yeah. Which is, I think, is really... It makes you want to kind of manage your own scoring in some ways, right? If you're playing this
game. You want to be in a close second all the
basically,
time.
Ideally, you want to be in a close second. Or you want to be, maybe be in second place after season one and then steam ahead.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about the other two cards.
Because
you
had one card. I was in second place. I got one card. Then I had a big turn where I got a load of resources from kicking a ghost out.
Yeah.
Just got lucky on a roll. And I got nearly a 10-point lead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily
but
10. Yeah.
Then everyone started to slowly catch up. Wayne had a bunch. Wayne had two assignment cards. Simon had three. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the game, the difference between me having one assignment card and Simon having three was huge.
I nearly doubled my entire
score. You nearly doubled your
score
at the end of the game.
I think I was
on
28 before I played, before I scored my bonus cards. I finished on 52.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you jumped a good, 10, 12 points ahead of me?
Yes.
More than.
What do you think of that as a design choice?
I think it's really clever. I really like catch-up mechanics in this sort of game.
Mm.
I would need to play it more to see how swingy that is.
Mm.
Because if you can keep it close and you're in a close second and you can pick up some good scoring cards, you could have a massive jump at the end of the game.
Because there is absolutely nothing stopping you in this game from knowing how and when you will score. It's all public. Mm-hmm. You can choose when you score points to an extent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, you could actively avoid scoring points. At you can choose not times. To build a building.
You can do
choose
other
not
stuff.
To do an upgrade.
You could just get resources. Just like prepare yourself for the next turn. Right? Yep. You just kill ghosties.
Yeah, you could,
harvest.
You see the end of a season coming up. You just go, okay, I'm going to stall out this last round.
Yeah.
Collect resources, sit on them, let myself fall behind.
Yeah.
So I get an assignment card or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then have a big turn right in the beginning of the new season.
That's 100%, I think, a possible strategic thing. Yeah.
And then if you're in last, you get to pick where the ghosts go.
Yeah.
And you could potentially have a huge turn for catch-up.
Yeah. It's certainly an interesting one. Mm. It's not one that I've, you know.
It's one where everyone wants to be losing.
Yeah.
Or really winning.
Or really, really winning.
Yeah, I thought I had a good lead, and it just evaporated right at the very end.
You did, but also, I think, because you pick your assignment cards in advance of the season, you need to pick them well.
You do. Right? You do.
Because
yeah, I actively chose that I would build windmills and sawmills, and then I went out and I built windmills and sawmills to the cost of any other progression in any other factor.
So,
but it worked out really well because dozens of points.
Well, here's a thought. The season two assignment cards, the ones at the end of season one,
mm-hmm.
you might not know what you're going to score at the end of the game. So you're mostly picking a card blind.
Mm.
At the end of season two, when you're picking the season three assignment cards and you potentially pick two,
mm-hmm.
you probably have a much better idea of what's going to score you points. The difference there is probably huge.
But also consider this. Simon was by himself at the top of the map for a good portion of the game.
Yeah.
If there was a fourth player here contesting you for that space.
Oh, huge. Yeah. So different.
That's a good point.
You were contesting me in the... Yeah. South of the map.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
My first bonus card was have the most buildings in a given tile.
Yeah.
Well, I was on my own by nearly half the board. I was fairly assured on that.
We talked about
it,
right?
And then I just built more and more buildings. Sawmills and windmills.
Because the action economy is quite limited, particularly things like movement, and you have difficult terrain, stuff like that, you can find that you end up staying in a relatively small region of the board.
Yeah.
Coming and going from the city, mostly, but then into various different sort of hex quadrant.
I went on four tiles, but only onto the corner of one.
Yeah, and so. Because the map size doesn't change with the number of players, at two players, you're probably going to have to be more careful about the ghosts, because that's going to be a bigger element.
Yeah, yeah.
At three players, there's the risk that one player gets left on their own and could have a runaway big scoring turn.
Mm-hmm.
And at four players, it's going to get really cutthroat and crowded.
Cutthroat and crowded, exactly.
But ghosts are probably less of a problem.
Possibly, but although with more buildings, less places for the ghosts to go.
True.
So it's interesting. I think...
the balance would be very different.
Yeah, definitely. With a fourth player, for sure, it would have been different because you're then fighting for that. So I think it's definitely an interesting design choice. I personally like it. I can see how some people might not like it, but I think... At four players, this is probably what this game is made for.
I can see it being quite swingy between two, three, and four player counts.
Very different
games.
And
being quite a different game.
Yeah. Which, again,
three was good.
Arguably, is a good thing.
Yeah, three was fine. I really enjoyed it still.
All right, someone get Matteo. We need a four player game.
Absolutely. So, BGG rates this a question mark
as
out of
a
five.
Question mark.
It's too new. And also,
so ahead of the game, guys.
The BGG page is largely incomplete, so fill in the blanks.
Surprisingly, I didn't know anything about this game, so I haven't seen it a massive amount of popularity for it, which I think is a real shame. I think, if anything, hopefully this gets the word out a little bit.
It's our hidden gem, right?
It really is. Absolutely. So let's dive on from there. But how would you rate this game in terms of complexity out of five?
It's three.
Three seems right.
I'd say three. There's the possibility that you could dive quite a lot into the... Euro planning element, right?
Yeah.
But that's down to the players.
I think it's a strong three.
It's
and
a
that's
three.
About it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go more than that.
Definitely wouldn't put it above that.
No.
The
not
individual
much
elements of, well, I move by doing this, everything is the flip of a token. So it's not complicated to learn in that sense. It's just the depth to which you want to plan and strategize.
Quite right, Simon.
Yep, quite right.
So let's talk about that theme gameplay interaction. Does it feel thematic? And
I feel thoroughly spooked.
Do you? Good. It's certainly a Euro
spooked
game.
And whimsical.
A whimsical spooking.
Yes. Spirited Away style, right?
Absolutely. Like a tickle of your balls. A ghostly tickle of the balls.
Interesting.
Yeah. Spooked, but ooh, whimsical.
I think the key thing is that it's haunted land, so those goes to the USP, and I think that it adds a great little touch. Otherwise, this would just be a territory control game.
Yes, Euro game X.
I like the combination of like crisis management on top of the engine building Euro territory control. You know, I'm not going to say it's cookie cutter, but it's that sort of game.
Yeah,
it's a fairly light touch, I'd say. I don't think the ghosts are wildly thematic. It could be a number of other elements on the board which stops you doing the thing.
Yeah, they could be like some sort of environmental problem or events.
Any other kind of
volcanoes,
beast or
beasts. But absolutely.
I like it.
I would 100% agree with you, gents. It's light wash, but I think it's enough. And the production, again, I'm going to refer back to that, does a great job of making the theme that is on it come alive.
Yeah,
more.
Particularly with like the artwork for the tiles and the cards that make you think fairy tale, right? Quite whimsical, mystical.
It certainly helps with it.
You guys remember the computer game Settlers? Back in the day,
I remember.
I've got a strong feeling of that.
Like that, with ghosts.
Go out and explore. Oh, you're in water, you get water. You're on rock, you get rock, etc. Yeah. Build things with what you've bought. Oh no, there's ghosts. Would have been an awesome added element.
Yeah, right. There's ghosts. Exactly. It would have been great. Let's talk about the flow then. How do you feel about the term length and the gameplay flow?
I thought it was pretty good. Like I mentioned it already. The way the seasons and the rounds are subdivided, I like that sort of management.
I think that's really
good. To be honest, a lot of Euro games have like an upkeep income phase at the end of every round, and that can become a little bit cumbersome. So the way that the catch up mechanics work around that subdivision of rounds into seasons is clever. I really like how that sort of fits together, and it does evoke, you know, a feel of seasons.
Mm.
Right, where you only get the refreshing exploit tokens so that you can reharvest after a season's expired. Mm. That reduces the number of decision points, I think, as a season progresses, you could get more and more bogged down in the number of options that you have, except you probably won't be, because the board will get more and more crowded and actually you have less options to counter it.
Yeah.
So the game like naturally reduces the
decision space.
I think it reduces it a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So that you're not constantly left with, okay, well, I started with 4 actions. Now I've got 12.
Yeah.
Because actually you're probably right. The decision space does push back, and the crisis control element grows over the course of the game, right, to balance it out. And you always sort of feel like you're probably trying to make the same sort of number of decisions. It might be a little bit trickier because there's more iterations of options, but I don't think it drastically increases over the course of the game, because, you know, suddenly you've gone from being able to move 4 spaces to 6.
Yeah.
But in reality, those extra points of movement might not necessarily be you running around all over the board. They might be that you're actually not necessarily using all of those spaces up, because, you know, there's actually nowhere to go. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, I think that's a really good summation, Tom. Mm. And as much as you're saying, you know, you go from 4 to 12, you're not really, because the cost of things does go
up.
Yeah,
the cost scales.
You and Wayne can harvest twice in a round. Well, you can, but good luck getting to and finding spaces that aren't
place
harvest,
exactly.
That don't have a building, don't have a ghost that you can reach.
Mm.
All of these things. So actually, you only ever really have, I'd say,
it's interesting, the ghosts,
maybe a couple more options
ghosts,
per turn than you thinking start
the,
with.
The buildings sort of alleviate some of the decision space, because the buildings become automatic income.
Yeah. It takes away the decision and
you
gives
don't
you
have
a manager,
to worry about
which
buildings you're activating each turn, because they just activate.
True. I tend to struggle with games that require you to gather and spend resources and going, oh, I never feel like I've got enough resources. Here, whack down a building. I'm going to guarantee I got that. Whack down another building. Cool, I'm going to guarantee you. Mm. So after three rounds, I had, or maybe four rounds, I had one of each building. Cool, start the round, I've got one of each. I can do pretty much any of the other options in the game because they all only require a combination of two of the things I'm guaranteed to have. And for me, that is a really good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the flow is actually really nice. Turns don't feel that long. I mean, even at four players, which I have played this at, it never feels that long. You're never going to be spent ages doing a turn, which is quite nice. Like you say,
I wonder if it would be functional with everyone doing one action and then passing. Or because you have to take your whole turn, right? Mm. And turn lengths do increase. So there is more downtime as the game goes
on. But I could even argue that might take longer to do.
Yeah, it might,
than just flipping a few things over.
It doesn't feel hugely burdensome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you only move and then someone else does a thing and then someone else does a thing and then it comes back to you and like, well, now I can't do the thing I wanted to do, which was the whole point of me moving.
That would be trickier to plan
for. I think
for.
You'd forever be shut out of your options. Mm.
I think also the decisions that you make do also change significantly based on the difficulty you're playing. Because if you're playing with the ghosts that stop your buildings producing, suddenly you're thinking, my guaranteed production is no longer guaranteed until I go kill this ghostie.
Yeah.
Or in fact, me as the third player, I'm going to pop these ghosts down to where your buildings won't yield.
Yep.
Right, yes. So that becomes very different.
It's a strong pivot into ghostbusting at that point.
Yeah, very strong pivot into the ghostbusting. Alrighty, let's move into those final thoughts on Haunted Lands. Simon, what do you like the most about Haunted Lands?
I think probably I've just covered it. It's that ability to, up to a point, guarantee what you're going to get for most of your actions and most of your turns.
Mm.
You can, within reason, other players and a couple of lucky dice rolls granted, work out roughly how your turn might play out at the beginning of a season, I think. Mm. Which speaks really well to me for this kind of game. When you are gathering and spending resources, I like being able to go, if I do this, then I can do this, then I can do this. And it's not more than about three steps. It's not, oh, if I do this now, in three more turns, I'll be able to do this. And then in four more turns... There's not that level of depth to it, which actually I think is really good. It's a sweet spot of balance of action, economy and reward.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, I love an efficiency puzzle, and this one isn't too many steps, right? Which I think mirrors what you're saying. So it's enough there that you can comfortably feel like you can plan a turn. And more often than not, I think you're probably not going to be locked out of the thing you want to do by someone else beating you to it. But occasionally you will be.
Yeah, and then there's always something else you can do.
Yeah.
You can't not have a turn where you achieve something. No. I don't think it's possible.
No,
we've
not
seen it.
You've got nice options. I like being able to sort of look at... You can look at the combinations of resources required for the buildings. You can look at the combinations required for... the market, you can look at the combinations required for the skills, and you can try and work out a rough path that you want to try and follow through the game from the get-go and see how it goes.
Yeah. I'm going to harvest here. Oh, I can't. Okay, I'm going to build here. Oh, I can't. Okay, I'm going to go to the market and I'm going to get a skill upgrade. You have to be able to do
and I think
one of those things. You can't. I've not seen it at all where you can't get to a space and do something.
So with that said, and the planning element, right, I think it's tricky to pivot, right? You can't necessarily pivot in this game, but that is helped massively by the catch-up mechanics. I don't think that even though Wayne was behind, he ever did you feel like you were massively behind?
Were
the catch-up mechanics helping?
Here's the thing, I was partially behind by my own design, right, which is me doing what I normally do, which is
I
pick a mechanism and I go, I want to try and see what this does and see if it works or not.
In on one mechanism doesn't necessarily work in a Euro game.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. This time it didn't work. 100% need to build in this game. I went, did something else. But that's fine. I mean, I enjoy the process of that. For me, I think, it's almost too obvious to say that I really love the production of this game, which I think is about as perfect as it could possibly be for a game of this type. It's
totally valid, dude.
Freaking marvellous. And I think it drags me into the enjoyment of the game.
I love how it looks.
It's absolutely beautiful. I love how it looks. I love how it feels. I love the fact that It gives you those options without being completely burdensome.
Okay. I like that the board is busy without being crowded.
Yeah, it's busy without crowded.
There's never really more than one thing in a space, which is super important.
Very readable. Interpret the game state quite easily, even though there are, 40 meeples on the board? Yeah. You can relatively easily interpret that.
I agree.
It's not completely buried in pieces.
And it's another nod to the production and design of it. Mm-hmm. It's excellent.
Yeah, really, can't say enough. I was consistently engaged and engrossed in the little world of
Kalina.
Ghost chasing.
Yeah, Kalina. Yeah.
Spooky ghost.
Yeah, spooky ghost. And yeah, that design brilliance extends to the readability, the iconography, the rule set, etc. There was always an answer to a question. You guys had a question? Quick look in the rule book. Ah, that's the exact answer that we need. Fabulous. Yeah, really great rule set, really great design, great and interesting decision spaces. But again, we'll sort of shrink and then expand again over the course of the game. And also another thing that I love, and I'm just sort of rifling a few things off, I love the combination of skills and how they break the gameplay loop. Mm. And you guys haven't seen the rest of them, but the combinations that you can
I had a look at them. Yeah, yeah. This would be good with maybe this one would be really cool with this one.
Really, really cool. It just brings the game to a whole new level.
Here's a question.
Has this
played very differently from the other times you've played it?
Yeah, every time.
Cool.
Very different.
That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's very different. Anything you didn't like about Haunted Lands?
No, I found very little that, I mean, maybe because I won this game, which means I was able to achieve what I wanted to
losing. I've got to agree with Simon. I don't think I've got any glaring downsides.
No major complaints. I think the only thing that you might question is whether or not that the catch-up mechanisms are right for you. And I think through more play that will come apparent. But I think it's totally fine.
If you can very closely manage your score to be in a close second and save up points for a big swing, it could be very swingy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think it's intentionally designed to foster that.
No.
And it would be quite difficult to do that.
Alrighty. So we talked about what you like the most. Who might this game be for?
People who like crunchy-ish Euros?
Yeah, maybe people wanting to take a slightly more than tentative step into the world of Euro games.
Mm. People who like territory control games and engine builders.
I've still, remarkably, sit down listeners, yet to play Catan.
Yes.
But does this sit somewhere in that vague area of
Catan,
resource things?
Catan has a lot more randomization in the resource production.
Okay.
They don't always produce random spaces, produce resources. And Catan has a bit more of a social element in that you can trade with people.
Okay.
But if you liked it, would you like this, do you think? It's a Euro game.
Oh, yeah. This is a slightly heavier, more Euro than something like Catan is, for sure. But I don't think it's a million miles away from that sort of decision space.
Yeah. I mean, if you like your traditional Euro games, right, which is your farming in the Mediterranean type games, this takes that to another level in terms of its production and I think in terms of its really interesting game design. Mm-hmm. So I think if you like any sort of game like that, so I think it's actually really, really nice.
Or if you really like Busting Ghosts.
Or if you like Ghost of Busting.
Yeah,
quite right.
I think it might be a really interesting kind of sideways step for a lot of people into something they might not necessarily initially think of. But I think there's enough there for a reasonable range of interests.
Here's one. I think people who like Scythe will like this.
Well, I was hesitant to mention Scythe because I wasn't sure how much of a parallel it truly drew.
I think you're right, you know.
There is an engine here for people to build around.
There is.
And Scythe is an efficiency puzzle.
Yeah.
Scythe is not a war game. It's an efficiency puzzle, as is this.
I think that's a shout, Tom.
Yeah, there's definitely strong differences. Once you own a spot in this, you own a spot in this.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change that. But yeah, I there are some parallels to be drawn.
Yeah.
This is lighter by far.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Much more accessible, but I don't want to call it an oddity because it's definitely well within realms of a normal game. There's nothing wild and wacky about it, but yeah, really satisfying.
Absolutely. It sits in its own little space, actually. I quite like that about it. All right. So your final words then, your final conclusion and your final rating for Haunted Lands. Who would like to dive in first?
I'm going to give it... Can I give it a half? Can I give it like a four?
Why not?
I want to give it like a 4.5.
That's a good score.
I really like this.
Yeah, it's good.
I've only played it once, so I'm reserving the half because I've only played it once.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's a good thing to say.
It's a strong first impression.
Right? I think first impression was great. Having looked at some of the other skill cards, I can see some really cool combos that could potentially happen. I'd love to play this again, and I'd be really interested to see how it plays with 2 and with 4.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be really quite a different game on different player counts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and final word is ghosts.
Not literally final word. Every time, Tom. Simon, your final words, plural.
Yeah.
And your final rating for Haunted Lands.
I'm going to mirror that. I think I'll give it a 4 out of 5, a very solid 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Agreeing with Tom. I only played it the once with a 3-player count, so curious to see it. But generally, at the moment, if you said, do you want to play Haunted Lands? I'd say, absolutely. I know it won't play for a super long time, so it won't take all day, which, again, I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You ask me to sit down for a 3-hour game, I'm going to have to consider
my
back and everything else. it's very much, as I say, it sits in there as an interesting and quite unique variation on a fairly familiar formula, which sits at a really pleasant point in terms of gamesmanship for me.
Love that. Like, what a great thing. For me, this is a 5 out of 5. I love it. I think this really speaks to me, the design. And you can, yeah. Also, listener, this may be tempered by the fact that I bought it, but whatever. I think it's fabulous. There's plenty of games that I've bought that I've not given a 5 out of 5 to.
Yeah.
This is a fantastic game.
And to be fair, we don't review them.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, quite.
If we don't like it,
we don't review
probably
it.
Won't talk about it.
Exactly. I absolutely love this. I think the production is, like I've said it, I think it's perfect for what this game is trying to do. It's very engaging. The gameplay is interesting. I think there's lots of options. The replayability is high. I think it's a fabulous, fabulous game that needs more buzz. And that's my final words on it. 5 out of 5 from me.
Really curious that this was designed by Leonardo, who we know has designed the epic upcoming RPG exploration game that's coming out, and where the two different kind of sets of play style sit within the one brain.
I know.
Really curious to see.
Obviously a great designer, mate. Yeah. And actually, interestingly, just before we do go off into the outro, you recognise the flippy tokens thing. That was also in that... Oh, what's the game called now?
Requiem?
Requiem. Yeah, that's
it. Took me a moment. Yeah, I was thinking Revive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Revive's a whole other game.
Use a similar mechanism, but obviously with a different framework. But with that, thanks for listening to Bored Stupid. Subscribe to us for updates to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can also find us on Instagram at Bored Stupid UK, run by Simon, and also on YouTube with me and Matt. Video content twice a week at the moment. So get in there while you can. Give us a subscribe and give us a like. And if you get any comments, please do stick it where you can stick a comment, because we love talking to you. And
stick
it
where the sun don't shine.
if you got a comment, we don't want to freaking hear it. But if you played Haunted Lands, actually relatively unlikely, but what do you think of the sound of it? Has our commentary convinced you to potentially reorder it? And I really think you should. This game certainly needs more buzz. And if you have played it, did you pick it up at Spiel? What do you think of the combination of crisis management and engine building? What skill combinations have you found to run away on your ghost-busting efforts? Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again real soon.
You know the German word, or rather the word poltergeist, comes from German. Basically means rumble ghost.
Does it really?
Or noisy ghost.
I think I'd heard noisy ghost before. Heard rumble ghost.
I've never heard rumble ghost.
It gives a whole new meaning to the 80s movie.
That's very whimsical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 80s movie.
There you go, folks.
Rumble ghost.